Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to another episode of Betches Brides. I'm your host, Fallon Carter. Joining us today, we have again Sarah Schreiber. Sarah is the Associate Editorial Director at Brides, and we've asked her to join us once again to talk about all things 2024 wedding trends. In her latest episode with us, she gave a sneak peek into one trend. So if you missed it, you know, circle back over there and make sure you give it a listen. But Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hello, Fallon. Hello again. Thank you for having me. This is going to be a good one. I'm glad to be back for sure.
Because now the year is real and people just got a whole lot of engaged. And there's been so much on social about what's in, what we're leaving behind, and what we're bringing over to 2024. So last episode was phenomenal. This one, we got to knock it out the park. So thank you for coming back.
Of course. Let's do it. Let's dig
in. Talk to me about decor in 2024. We're seeing a lot here. Return of retro is probably the biggest one that we're seeing. Tell us a little bit more about what you're seeing in that vein.
For sure. I also, before we dig into like decor, we have food and bev, we have details. I kind of want to put a disclaimer on this conversation, Fallon. I would like to disclaim trends. When we talk about trends, right? Like, there's so much to a wedding, trends aside. The way I'm positioning trends and how we are looking at trends at Brides, trends are cake toppers, okay? Like picture a cake topper. It is the top level and everything below that, you have an entire wedding cake below that. Your wedding cake is the bedrock. These trends, like you take them, you leave them, they're in, they're out. At the end of the day, you make the decision that is personal to you, that feels right to you. Your wedding doesn't have to have a thing to do about trends, or it can be completely predicated on trends. You do you. But I think it's important to kind of like set the tone of the conversation with like these in lists, these out lists, they can feel like I'm doing something wrong or maybe I'm doing something right. I think there's no right or wrong really when it comes to like the wedding that you design. So long as it is personal and beautiful and executed well, like there are a million ways to do that in million iterations of an incredible wedding. So just a little disclaimer, top of the convo.
I absolutely love that. The way that I love that, it is the perfect opening. It's like, I think everyone, a lot of our listeners, we get emails of those kind of seeking the validation to make a decision on something.
Yes.
That's the perfect disclaimer to truly choose your own adventure. What's right for you is yours.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. I just think like we don't want to, you know, our goal, I think when we're in the wedding industry, our goal isn't really to make anybody feel excluded or to make their ideas feel like, you know, they aren't actionable or worthy or valid. Like you said, I think that, you know, we can kind of start this conversation with trends is like, if something speaks to you, Do it. Pepper it in. There are so many other ways, you know, to craft the perfect wedding. You can pepper in those trends. You can use them, you know, to your advantage. But I think on that note, disclaimer aside, we can position and transition right into disco and retro because I am so actually excited about this trend. I mean, anybody who follows me on Instagram, anybody who knows me, I am like a vintage girly. I love it. I love the kind of return to retro in all things. And I think like weddings are informed by culture and what we're seeing now, obviously the return of Y2K, everybody's getting a 90s haircut. You know, like all of these things are kind of are coming back in
vintage
a big way.
Vintage is cute.
Thrift culture, right? Like everybody's back in thrift stores. So I think like retro is kind of expressing itself in a few different ways when it comes to wedding decor. Disco, right? I mean, the return of disco. I know we talked about timeless, trendy disco last time, but this like disco theme, the disco themed after party, the disco like second look, everybody's wearing shimmer, you know, everybody's on the dance floor, Saturday Night Fever. I really think that's playing out. I mean, I think like retro is being iterated on in a lot of different ways, right? Like people are, I think, using vinyls at their wedding. We did that at our wedding, actually, in 2022. My husband brought down our vinyl machine and record player vinyl machine.
That's I'm right here. Vinyl machine worked for me, but yeah, keep going.
Vinyl machine, time machine. Yeah. So, I mean, I think like, you know, these vintage piped cakes,
yeah,
which are so stunning to me. And I think have been done really, really well by some incredible cake vendors, bakers, like the sheet cake, the piping. I think it's very 80s, but it's also very like fun and colorful and modern simultaneously. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of these retro trends are kind of being expressed throughout the event.
Yeah. You know? I'm getting so many more requests now for like, of course, film photography is always my favorite, but
yes,
also like
disposable
cameras are definitely making its own thing. Even the new After the Tone, that concept is retro. Yeah, the guest book thing. It's kind of retro, even though it's still a modern take on leaving a voice note. It's a vibe. So I'm loving what we're seeing here with the retro-ness. I'm like, getaway cars are not Bentleys anymore. They're like vintage Mercedes. And I like what you said about sprinkling it in. Like it doesn't have to be a literally 80s wedding moment that's happening here.
Totally.
But those micro touches are like, that's cute. I can dig it. I'm here for that.
Tell me,
what are you seeing with this palazzo inspiration?
Yeah. So I think this one is a little broad.
To me because I have no idea. I'm still like,
Okay. So I think like the palazzo decor concept has kind of come out or been born out of this like Italy destination wedding hotspot.
Okay.
I feel like, you know, we can talk about destination weddings is like, wow, an entire segment in of itself.
That part.
And like, we can get into that and like whatever. But I think like post-COVID, people started traveling again. I've seen this all over my Instagram feed. I feel like everybody last summer was in Italy at the same exact time.
At Villa Balbiano. Why is everyone in Lake Como?
That part though. Like that, actually. Everyone got married there. I mean, I can't quantify it with numbers, but I can definitively say that I saw more weddings at that venue than I think I ever have in my 8-year-long career in weddings and reviewing weddings. So I feel like, you know, I think a lot of decor has been informed around that destination, whether you are getting married in Italy or not, whether you are having a destination or a stateside wedding, right?
So yeah.
You can bring that, you know, that vibe, those columns, the really manicured gardens. You can either, you know, find a similar venue that speaks to that vibe.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of it is structural and how a venue looks. And I think it's almost like venue inspired. You kind of need to start with that as the
bones.
Yeah. I could see this being translated on a really cool dance floor. If anybody is going the custom dance floor route, those really beautiful textures, you know, think about the stone, the marble work that you might see in those types of places, that Italian villa, those like dusty hues, that terracotta, you know, like I think there are a lot of different ways that we can translate that.
Yeah. Stationary. You can definitely lean into that.
Yeah.
Your tablescapes, totally fun ways to bring that Italian. When you say architecture, I'm like, what I'm seeing a lot more too is there's decor that's not literal flowers. Like people are using artwork. People are using different ways to kind of translate a vibe or an actual kind of this palazzo moment through other touch points, which I really, from a sustainable touch point, we'll get there later. It's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
So any other takeaways from this palazzo inspiration that you love seeing right now?
Yeah, I think it's this really nice play of near and far. You know, people are looking, you know, beyond their day to day. I think it's really cool that people are looking to other places and other people for inspiration as opposed to this like one narrow-minded, you know, concept of the American wedding. And I think this idea, I think it really comes back to the whole stateside versus destination thing and how you can kind of have a destination inspired wedding wherever you are in the world. And I also think like as a former art history minor. It's very cool that people are, like you said, turning to these other touch points to make decor decisions. I think that's a very cool, smart trend. You know, like people are thinking a little bit harder about what they want their wedding to look like.
And I think that's a little bit
less obvious and feel like. Exactly. Yeah. And I love that that's one that you kind of need to be like, wait, what is that? Wait, I love that. And then translate it accordingly.
And that's one of the things I kind of love about a destination wedding is it allows you to express a different culture. It allows you to introduce new things to people that they wouldn't have kind of stumbled upon themselves. And what's great about this Palazzo Inspiration is you don't necessarily have to go to Italy to achieve that. You could be in New Jersey, like you're saying, at a lovely place that has kind of that architecture and that structure, and you're introducing this aesthetic to them and your guests are feeling transported, but they're totally 5 miles from home. So
love that. Much less expensive too.
That part. Well, I don't, we could talk about
depends.
That. Yeah. I was like, it
doesn't necessarily mean apples.
Talk to me more about this bohemian moment. Is that, I feel like this has always been a trend. Like when I think of bohemian vibes, I'm like, oh, it's like Tulum in my mind, but express it a little bit more.
Yep. Bohemian. I think this is very interesting too. I think bohemian has changed a little bit. So I feel like 5 years ago, bohemian was like macrame.
Rugs. Oh, yes. Oh, God. You know, this. Yep.
Rugs on the aisle, macrame, woven things, hanging planters next to you. So, you know, I also think like this is a really good point that you bring up, Fallon, right? Like bohemian maybe, you know, is a word that I think brides have used to describe their aesthetics for a long time. Brides and grooms have used to describe their aesthetics for a long time. But when we talk about trends, like trends come back. There is nothing new under the sun. You know, things get changed. We change them for 2024, but they're kind of always there. So can you ever really plan a completely trendy out of the box wedding? You know, like these things are lasting and long lasting. Yeah. So you don't really need to worry too much or think too hard about it. I think things come back around. So when we talk about bohemian, I think for me and how I'm interpreting this right now and how I am kind of excited about it, I'm currently wearing red cowboy boots. So I feel like that's also why I'm a little excited about it. I am feeling like bohemian Western. I feel like that is where we are maybe kind of headed in a cool way. I feel like people kind of separate those things maybe, but I feel like the idea of bohemian has kind of become like this organic, earthy, like, you know, situation. And I think the idea of the Western has come back in fashion. We have had
Louis Vuitton did a whole Western influence show. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, like it's definitely like in the lexicon of fashion, it's in the lexicon of TV, Yellowstone, all these things. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the bohemian Western wedding is kind of coming back
in some ways. I dig that. I mean, I'm also a huge fan of Westworld, but also just thinking, I'm seeing a lot more weddings that are on ranches, on farms. Like Wyoming is having this whole moment, like Nashville and like Blackberry Farms. Everyone's going a little bit.
Tennessee
going a little west. So it's like if you're not going to Lake Como, you're going to the west. So.
I could not agree more with you. And I have seen that. Like I feel like I've run 4, 5, 6 weddings this year that have taken place on a ranch out west. Like these are things that people are doing and they are not like from Montana. These people are not from Tennessee. They're from the
Chicago.
Coasts. Right. Chicago. They're flying in and it's like that's been such an interesting transition and differentiation and destination too.
Yeah.
And I think like the bohemian Western kind of hybrid mashup, I think is playing out that way too. Mm. And I mean, of course, like when we also talk about bohemian, right? Like these trends are adaptable, you know, the layered rugs, like absolutely. You know, if that brings you joy, if you want to have the layered rug at the altar, like that's, you know, great. Love that. But I also love the idea of kind of pushing the envelope a little bit on what does bohemian really mean right now? And what other things are kind of influencing this type of wedding decor aesthetic? So
agreed.
I would say Western, the hat is on for sure.
The hat is on. So. And even like you're saying, there's a mashup moment. You can even turn it to a return of retro meets Western in a whole, like the cowboy boots, the whole vibe. Like this is
totally.
I think 2024 overall, everyone's having fun. Period. Yes.
And I think like that's what trends are. They are pure, unadulterated fun. Yeah. And I think like we all like we look forward to them. We want to talk about them. We want to analyze them. We want to know where they came from. But like they are those cake toppers. They are those exclamation points. They are fun, you know. And I think, yes, you can use them, of course, to build an entire event around. But, you know, and there are ways to do it in a way that like does not, you know, date the event or, you know, this was a very clear 2024 wedding, right? Like that's not necessarily our goal. But I do think like these are fun jumping off points in it. Yeah. And it helps people explore what they like, you know, maybe you were a boho chic girl, you know, of the early, you know, the 2010s. But now what does that mean to you? And maybe there's like another little flair that you've added to your boho mm-hmm. beliefs.
Yep. So, yep. Yeah. I like that. It's a little exploration.
Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always afford the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you. Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for the season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. So Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you can get your choice of any six styles. You choose whatever you want to rent for whatever you have going on. It's totally up to you. There are no parameters. You get access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. There are no fees. There's no late fees, no damage fees, no fees to pause or cancel. So no big deal if you like lose a button. Uh-oh, I spilled something on it. Or you just need to take a break. They have inclusive sizing all the way up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. You always have the option to buy what you love for sometimes up to 75% off. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any six styles. But right now, you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code BRIDES20. Just go to Nuuly.com. That's Nuuly with two U's and enter the code BRIDES20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's Nuuly.com. Nuuly with two U's with code BRIDES20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
I now want to move to paper.
Oh, paper. Okay.
And I learned paper. A new word, I think 2 weeks ago, ephemera, which is things that you only use once.
Yes.
Which
yes,
I was like, yes. Oh, mind blown. Anyway, celestial. Mm-hmm. Is it celestial? Celestial?
Celestial.
Celestial. That's a word we're going to use all week. These motifs. Talk to me about all of the things. Celestial. Mm-hmm. Motifs.
So I feel like, you know, celestial, the stars, you know, the zodiac. Like, I feel like, you know, the zodiac, things that you love depending on your zodiac, you know, have been really big for us at Brides. And I think people are kind of looking, you know, love being faded in the stars, right? Like, I think it's a fun decor idea for couples that are getting married. And I think that there are a lot of fun ways to do it. So like, yeah, you can use like very literal celestial motifs on your paper suite. So that might be like actual stars. I think like color schemes really come into play here too. Mm-hmm. When we talk about like celestial and they're a little darker, they're a little richer, they're deeper. You're thinking like night sky, maybe some mm-hmm. like white text contrasted against that. You know, there are a lot of different ways to kind of make it your own on paper, but I do like this idea of like the celestial motif. I think we've seen like a lot of like really pretty hair pieces with stars. And so, you know, it's like, it's not just decor, maybe it is, but it's also being translated through, yeah, that fashion, that paper. And then of course, like on the tabletop, you have those moody details. Hmm. You could use those, you know, wrought iron star things, you know, the way that you have the menus set up around it. I'm thinking half moon menus.
Cool. You know?
So there are a lot of cool ways, I think, to do it. Like this rooftop also, evening event?
Yeah.
Night like, under the stars, you
that's,
know?
So we did a wedding in Portugal and we actually had it was at a UNESCO site. Mm-hmm. So it was like the darkest place in, I guess, the world or one of the darkest places where you could really see the stars really clearly. And we had a person, I always get astronomer and astrologer confused. I guess the person who looks at the stars and there's a person who reads your charts. Anyway, the person who looks at the stars, that brings the telescope, we had one of those people come.
And it was cool.
It was an awesome activity. But I think that's also, you could also have an astrologer come and maybe do people's star charts too.
Totally.
As an activity.
Totally. Yeah, like a little booth, something yeah. experiential during, you know, a reception or an after party. Love this.
Experiential is like, we're yeah. seeing so much more activity and like, I want to get an artist to come and paint our guest. And yeah. like the weekends are becoming more robust and more full and eventful, I would yeah. say, wouldn't you?
I could not agree more. Yeah, and I think celestial and even like Western and Bohemian, they kind of all play into that idea too, right? Like it's a theme, but it's also a place and it's a type of event. Like maybe if you're doing the Bohemian Western, you're, you know, the day before you're getting married, you're going on a horseback riding trail, you know, or you're fly fishing on Sunday, or, mm-hmm. you know, if it's a celestial event, yes, you're having that astronomer, you know, read constellations and walk people through what they're looking at. And then you also have, you know, somebody reading cards at a table. Experiential is, I think, arguably one of the biggest buzzwords in 2024. Hmm. These events are getting longer. They're getting more jam-packed. I think they're happening even on different days as a result. You know, like I feel like the idea of the Saturday one and done wedding is changing a little bit. It is, of course, always going to be
yes.
there. But I do think for the couples that are like, what else? You know, they want to take people on an experience. They want to show them something that's important to them. You know, whether that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Maybe the wedding's on Friday because they want 2 days after the wedding.
I love a Friday wedding.
To have these moments and experiences. Yeah. So that's cool because I feel like I've been seeing that. So it's nice to hear you validate that too, that you're seeing it on the event planner side.
I even talk some of my guests into having, especially when we're doing destination, I'm like, yep. let's please do a Friday wedding just because yeah. you're giving people the ability to rest and really relax the following 2 days. And I'm still getting a lot of pushback though. I'm like, oh, people have to take off of work and did it. I'm like, everybody's working remote now. They can't take this one extra day off. So, but I think people really do like immerse themselves in the full weekend when you do it that way. It's absolutely magical. And even the domestic ones, people love a time, just go an hour away from their house, yeah. get a cute little boutique hotel, recharge themselves for 2 days and have a celestial night, you know?
And have a celestial night. I could not agree more. And it's something that I even started to do myself attending weddings over the past year. You know, we went to a few. We were in Spring Lake, New Jersey. That's not that far from where we live. That's about an hour and a half door to door from us. We're like, forget it. Let's take 3-4 days. Let's go down there. It's a place we've never been. Let's stay in a beautiful little hotel. Mm-hmm. And then we can really enjoy ourselves and not feel like we're rushing to celebrate, you know, some of our dearest friends.
That part.
I completely agree. It doesn't need to be this destination context. Although I think we have framed it, you know, in that way. You know, with the idea of the experiential extended wedding weekend being kind of born out of the resurgence of destination events mm-hmm. post-pandemic. So I do think it's kind of all connected in some ways, but it's absolutely able to be executed whether you are, you know, here, near, or far across the pond.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love that it's adjustable for both types of events.
Agreed. And we're even focusing a lot more on kind of selling the event to kind of push people to get out of their comfort zone to say, oh, I can't make it because of this and I can't make it. It's like we're doing a little bit more extra legwork on even the branding side when it comes to creating a website that has more imagery of the location. We're going down and kind of shooting some cool video of the couple interacting, getting drone shots of the water, like nice. So that when you open this website, it's like, oh no, I cannot miss this weekend. So it's like there's heightened expectations for these thematic kind of wedding weekends. And yeah. that kind of transitions us over to wedding weekends are just gone, going. And what do you think? I mean, I know we kind of softly talked about, you know, this resurgence of traveling post-pandemic, but are you seeing any other reasoning behind such long weekends, given that cultural weddings sometimes have kind of been doing this?
Of course.
Like,
right, this is not necessarily new. Exactly.
And now Absolutely. We're kind of like, that's kind of fun. Are we trying to tiptoe from that? Or what do you think is one of the root causes for such a transition?
For sure. Yeah, I think no travel, explosion of travel is going to be a very natural connection there. But yeah, I mean, I agree. When we talk about like the trend of the extended wedding, you're completely right. Certain cultures have been doing this. Like this is ingrained in their weddings, in their unions, and always have been. And I think this also goes back to fun, right? You said it. Another buzzword I think of 2024. Why the hell not? You know, like why? And I think also weddings are an investment and people mm-hmm. know that. And I think costs have gone up. And I think either, you know, the pandemic maybe positioned this, people were able to save a little bit during the pandemic. And it also maybe recalibrated their priorities. Like, yeah. No, like being around the people that I love the most for as long as possible, like we don't really know, you know, if. Oh, I don't even want to say that out loud.
Yes.
But like, you know, we've learned to value the time, I think, that we share with the people that we love. You know, that's pandemic related, but I also think that's kind of its own separate idea too. Okay. And extending the fun and bringing the people that you love most into, you know, this type of extended fun mm-hmm. going to last and last and go on and on environment is just really kind of like increasing that special factor.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I hear this, I read this, I hear this a lot on couples questionnaires. One of their biggest highlights, one of their biggest takeaways is it was so incredible to me to have every single person that I love most in the world in the room with me. And I don't think that will ever happen again. And how privileged and how special am I to have that? And I think the idea of like, I want that for as long as I can, as much as I can. So I'm having this massive 5-day multiple event. Yep. Please wear the cowboy boots to this one and please wear all blue to that one and get in and have fun. And, you know, yes, it's branded. Yes, it's an experience. Yes, you're, you know, we want to sell it to the guests, but it's like, please take part in this very beautiful moment of my life with me because I love you so, so much. And I think like that's another core, you know, the pillar of why these things are happening. And I think it's actually a really, really beautiful pillar and reason as to why it is. So
I agree.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of my couples they met kind of during the pandemic and their families mm-hmm. never really met. And it's like the multi-day, I think, has also been a kind of a cause and effect of the fact that we're now having to get families to meet, greet, like each other. Let's make a memory together. And it's been so, I agree with you. Most of the feedback we're getting is I want an intimate venue. I want everyone now, that's probably why we're all going to Italy, because everyone wants a chateau. They want a villa. They mm-hmm. want some place where everyone can stay at the exact same place. On site. I want a pool. We all meet at the pool. Like that's what we're all trying to create, basically a super large house party, for lack of better words. And a community is what they're all trying to do.
Yep. Yeah. I think that completely, completely hits it. Like, let's just be a family under one roof after a time where we, you know, really couldn't.
We could
and
not.
Like also, hello, mom and dad, meet mom. And, you know, like I am marrying your son. Nice to meet you. Yeah. I mean, it's like we're kind of creating these moments for connection and as many moments of connections as
we can. Many as you can.
But I am also really excited about, you know, the idea of all of the ways that we are differentiating, mm-hmm. you know, these days and these events and these parties. I think the themes that have kind of been playing out have been very fun. You know, it's not like, oh, well, arrive on Wednesday. And then we'll hang out on Thursday and then we'll go out to dinner on Friday. It's like, we're actually going to be doing this, you know, we're going to go on a hot air balloon ride.
Yep.
I mean, it's not all that big, but I mean, some of them are. Or, you know, we're going to explore this part of town that is really special to me as a couple. And we're going to go to the restaurant where, you know, we got engaged. And then we're going to come back to the house and we're going to have, you know, a beach party and everybody's going to wear the tones and shades of pinks or blues. And it's going to look so good, and we're all in this together. So I'm kind of loving that idea of themes of these multi-destination themed events. So,
me too. They're my favorite to plan, and it's like every destination has its own thing, and you're really able to lean in it. And again, introduce your guests to something authentic and amazing that they wouldn't have stumbled upon without you. And it's even better. But attire codes, mood boards, all the things that kind of happen now. That's like another detail we get to plan. Very exciting. Yeah. But what are you seeing when people are communicating, like you're saying, dress in maybe a celestial motif moment or dress in a palazzo inspired? What are you seeing when it comes to communicating attire to guests now that we're having more thematic weekends?
Yeah, for sure. This is, I think, where that wedding website component is key. Mm-hmm. I am also thinking of Engage Summits and how they do this so well.
Like, they really do.
They did. And I think, like, and this is how I think people are doing it. They're creating Pinterest boards for their guests that have options for, you know, that kind of run the gamut on the color palette that they're looking at, levels of formality, you know, like whether you want to do the kind of classic rendition of one idea or a really cool casual idea. I mean, I think they're really being inclusive with these types of things and thinking about different ways to translate, like maybe a dress code that makes no sense just, you know, out loud when we're speaking about something, but then you see the ideas on Pinterest and you're like,
okay,
cool. And then I think also there's a moment where you're like, oh, that's going to be kind of fun. You know, like, I feel like, you know, wedding guests, and I know I've been on this, on the other side of this too. I'm like, oh man, I gotta figure out what I'm going to wear to go to this thing. And, you know, that's all well and good. And you want to make sure that, you know, you're dressing for, you know, the dress code and the place and the time and all these things come into play. But I think, you know, when we are communicating, if you want that very cool, very specific type of dress code, you definitely need to provide, you know, a visual mood board, whether that's on Pinterest, whether it's a little Google presentation. I mean, I know there are a lot of different ways to do it, but I do think the visual is really important. And that is where, you know, you're going to leverage your wedding website and really drive people to that and be like,
yeah,
take a look at what we're doing. You know, I don't think you're ever going to get everybody, but I think you will get most. So
you, and that's important. All that matters. They're the ones who'll get in the shot, but
right. Go to the bar.
Yeah. Right. Go over there. But I think it's like what you're saying. It's making sure you're setting the standard and you're communicating it effectively, because everyone's interpretation of your version of like lime green formal is going to be very different. But it's so amazing to see it fully executed. And you're, again, the sense of community is something we as humans, we thrive on. And when everyone is there, they will actually feel like they're a part of it if they all look together. And the pictures are going to be spectacular. So I would say lean into it. And shout out to Engage Summits, because y'all nailed it the first time.
They're the OG when it comes to, you know, that, themed events and you know, putting together a really, really specific fashion palette, color, whatever, all of it. So yeah, they've been doing it well for a long time.
So going back to the basically thematic weekends, now we're kind of taking it from the wedding to a honeymoon, and we're going with friends on the honeymoon too.
We are.
What you think?
Buddy moons. Okay. So yes, I think if destination or like extended domestic is happening and you're in a place that's kind of fun and you want to stay and kind of nest for a few minutes, I think that's kind of cool to have your people with you on a smaller, shorter timeline. I think like extending these things and having the idea of the buddy moon, I don't think it's mutually exclusive from the honeymoon. We've actually started to see couples taking two post-married trips. And one of them is often this extension of the destination or extended wedding weekend. They stay where they are. They hang by the pool. You know, there's not this like wrap up and peace out, which I kind of like. I mean, I think that's stressful, actually. I think if you can build, I call it a bonus day, into, you know, your post-married timeline, I think you should do that if that's, you know, if that works for your budget, if it works for, you know, everything else that you have going on. I would, that's a big tip. I think you should absolutely do that. But yeah, I think people are staying with them. And, you know, whether it's family, really close friends, maybe you haven't seen your college friends since you graduated. I mean, like that's special to have those types, the people that you really love, you know, the people that mean everything to you. I think, you know, you're not like, oh, time to go, you know, like you don't have those feelings. But you know, that's one little piece, I think, of the honeymoon puzzle. I think couples are actually taking those longer just them to duo trips. I think they're waiting a little bit. They're waiting for like peak season to go to the absolute bucket list destination that they, you know, that they've been dreaming of for years. You know, weddings, you know, the state of the world right now, things are way more expensive than they used to be. They're kind of taking a beat. They're taking a pause. They're saving up. And then they're going on that trip. I think that there are a lot of reasons why this double honeymoon is happening, but I do think it's happening. And sometimes one of them includes or, you know, comprises that buddy moon or people stay and hang with them. What are your thoughts? How do you feel about this? I feel like you have opinions about this.
No, I always do. I was like, why would you want to hang out with your friends? But
you're married.
I know. I was like, leave, please. But at the same, after working a wedding, I'm like, whew, I just need a breath. But at the same time, I can see not wanting the party to end either. Yeah. And I think the buddy moon is a way to even kind of manage the wedding blues, which we're hearing about, like all the thoughts about what you should have done, how to go, and all that thing is kind of cluttering your mind after the wedding has ended. I think the buddy moon is a great way to kind of softly transition to kind of getting then into a softer honeymoon. It's like a nice little middle ground, and it'll probably help your mental health a little bit better. But I love the double honeymoon, and my couples, I'm seeing a lot of it. Some are taking a micro, like the extended micro trip. Tiny. And then they're like, hey, we're going to Africa, or we're going to Japan, right, or we're going to,
yeah, you're like, Bali. Oh, okay. We're going everywhere. Like literally, and maybe all three of those things actually. Stacked trips. Yeah.
I think the concept of a honeymoon in my mind is like, oh, a couple of days on a beach. No, they're taking trips, like, and it's like you're saying, multi places, which is awesome. And I think it's also another thing to look forward to. And as you've planned a wedding for so many months, having now another thing to kind of plan is another way to softly assist with the wedding blues by giving yourself another activity to look forward to. So I'm down for it. I check off here for it. I want to do it too.
Yeah. I would actually just like I'm past the honeymoon, but I would just like to do that just for myself.
I was like, can we just, me and my girls just go? Like we're outside now.
See you in a month.
Please, period.
Yeah.
Now that we've touched on like the themes of weddings and kind of how long they are now, we're very excited. Let's talk about what we're seeing visually with lots more color. There's more texture. There's flowers. There's fruits on tables. We're coloring the glassware. Like it's like color exploded this season. What are you vibing with?
Big time. Yeah. I mean, I've seen color palettes, I think that in theory, I don't think I ever would have thought worked. And then in practice, absolutely 100% work. A lot of neon. I've been seeing neon primary colors.
Yes.
Like, you know, blues, reds, yellows, you know, and not like butter or like sage, not like riffs on primary or, you know, key core colors. I'm talking like green.
Highlighter.
You know,
Hunter.
Right. Like Hunter, like 100% on the nose color, not these, you know, and I mean, not that tones and like aren't being used to soften them, but I think it's just interesting to see these very primary shades used in very primary ways. And I think that is a change. You know, we're coming off of blush, we're coming off of sage, we're coming off of, you know, like even like I feel like mauve was having a moment, these dusty pastels, dusty blue, French blue. These are softer colors. I mean, and then you also, you know, obviously at Brides, we're all about Marseille blue color of the year.
Which is my favorite.
I mean, that is an electric, that is blue, blue. That is cobalt blue. You know, that is not, that's not soft. It's loud. It's bold. So I think like those types of like, you know, think of the color wheel and not the soft shades. That is, I think, the color. That is, those are the colors that we are really gearing up for in 2024. And I think that's kind of exciting. You know,
same.
I think we think of weddings as soft and beautiful. It's like they can be bold and splashy. Mm-hmm. And I think like, you know, from your POV talking about branding something, like, you know, anyone can do a blush wedding beautifully. Of course you can. If that's what you love, do it. But I think like these standout colors makes your wedding stand out. They are going to be visual highlighters in people's minds over the course of their lives. And I think that's, you know, kind of cool. So I think that's where color is headed. Different arrangements of colors using a series of bold colors.
Agreed. So, and one of my favorite things is also the addition of like pattern and texture. And I know we talked about this on the last episode, but I'm seeing like squiggly lines everywhere. The stationery is like the wave. There's so much, everyone is like fun. And sometimes I'll have an inquiry call with a couple and I'm like, hey, send me a couple images of your inspiration or what you're thinking. And when they send it, I'm like jumping from my screen. I was like, I didn't see this for you. And I think I'm like, is that your inner child trying to play with crayons right now? Like coming out, like, let's go. It's like, there's an inner person that is literally screaming, I want all of these colors and we're doing it because no one can tell me no. And I'm here for every single moment of it, through florals, through the mixing of flowers, the types of flowers, like this Ikebana style is like taking over the stems that are really kind of sharp and just like pronounced, very structural. Everyone's got a, like, it feels like artwork has like come right into the wedding space. Yeah. It's like everyone went to an art gallery last week and they're like, yeah, I like this. Let's do it.
So. Yeah. It's very pop arty. Like it feels very like electric and bold and red and blue. And yeah, I agree. It's, there's a lot of art focus. Could not agree more on a texture. I mean, or a pattern. I think pretty much, I would say 80% of the weddings that we're currently running have that. I'm seeing that everywhere. I love the mixed floral, different colors, different flowers. And glassware, I think, has become a really, really fun place for people to kind of really play up color. I mean, you think of glassware, it's like, oh, the crystal. No, like
no.
Goblets, like amethyst, green, you know, like different colors. And I think like these tablescapes are more exciting and invigorating and visually stimulating than ever before. And whether it's floral or fruit, and like moss is in right now. I mean, like it's not just floral. It's this entire moment on a tabletop where color and texture is being used in ways that I don't think it really has before. That is really creating these very like nuanced, upbeat types of places.
What I'm experiencing is people want authenticity and in a way that also means really using nature as it exists and not having to tone it up or down. And it's like the primary colors that we see in real life are now being like brought to tables. It's like moss is living there. The fruit is living there. Like we don't have to play with this. We don't have to dye the flowers anymore. Let's use them as they are, as they grow. And we're even growing flowers specifically for weddings now with some of our private estate events. And it's like, let's use the nature as it currently shows up and just done. Period. Good. We're good. I like it.
Totally.
Which is awesome.
It's like back to basics, but not, you know, like it's back to basics, but extra.
On its side.
Different type of basics, but it's still that core nature moment, color moment. Yeah, that's really interesting.
I dig it.
Yeah.
So now, talking about the things that we're going to eat, food and bev, which is everyone wants good food, good wine, and a great party. But
absolutely,
we're seeing a lot more non-alcoholic options. It's the year of the mocktail.
It is.
I'm very excited.
Me too.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, obviously it is a little contrived because we are having this conversation on January 24th.
Dry jam.
But I do deeply really believe that 2024 is the year of the mocktail. And I think there are a few reasons for that. I think, honestly, I think Gen Z is pushing this a little bit. I'm seeing this a lot on TikTok. I think they're looking at like alcohol culture and the way that we socialize. I mean, I've seen these conversations pan out, you know, in op-eds, on social. We do a lot of our gathering and meeting and connecting around alcohol. And I think we're finally starting to ask the question, why? I mean, yes, alcohol makes us feel good. It opens us up. It's fun. It's tasty. It's experiential for sure, depending on, you know, how you are imbibing. But I do think like we are starting to question as a society even like why that is, and that is impacting, you know, how weddings are, you know, being approached. Now, I do not think the open bar is done. That is not what I'm saying. And I think open bars, that I think if anybody goes to an open bar and there's not, goes to a wedding and there isn't an open bar, I think there's a level of like, okay. I mean, that's also fine if you want to do that. I'm not knocking it. I think that there are certain expectations that are still in place of weddings. But the mocktail, I think that's fun. You know, it's maybe there's two signature cocktails and a mocktail. And that's also like a really, that's an easy way to make your wedding more inclusive. You know, whether that's fun, it can be fun for kids depending on, you know, you want like, you know, you want your flower girl to have something fun. It's if it's like something fruity and cute and pink. But then there are also ways to kind of like really elevate them and expose your guests to different flavors in a way that just kind of doesn't involve booze. I think like, I don't think there's right or wrong here. I think it's up to the couple and can be decided on the couple level if this is something that they are interested in. Maybe they've reduced their drinking or are sober curious and they kind of want to put that into their event. Maybe like they know their friends are and they want to be inclusive and welcoming in that way. Or they're just like, this is cool. Like we don't need alcohol to have a good time. And like there are really incredible mocktail mixologists doing really incredible, fancy, fun things. I think like, you know, the world's your oyster really when it comes to the mocktail scene. And, you know, there's no right or wrong. But yeah, I think it's kind of fun. I just think it's a different layer of things to offer.
And I think what you're saying about inclusive, I think we have an episode coming out about catering and I talk about not just making the food. Like, yes, you've got your vegan options and your gluten-free and your dairy, but like you're saying, there are people who have different experiences with alcohol. And going to the bar and going to this very social event where everyone's throwing it back and you're like, I want to, coming back to community, I want to feel a part of the group. I got my chartreuse on like everyone else.
I did my part.
Right. But now I'm at the bar and I'm feeling a little way. So I think it's a great way to, like you're saying, just make everyone feel like they're part of the crew. And leaning now into kind of immersive culinary experiences, we've gone kind of out there with how we're presenting food, how we're preparing it, these kind of open concept kitchen moments. Like everything is so fun. We might need to call the episode All About the Fun in 2024. But
that's the trend, guys. It's just fun. Just have a good time.
Just fun. What are you seeing and what are some of your favorite kind of culinary experiences right now?
Oh, you just said my favorite one. We ran a wedding today where the reception took place. It was a Blackberry Farm. No, it wasn't. It was not a Blackberry Farm wedding. I'm not remembering the venue, but it was that. It was a reception in a restaurant, essentially, at a ranch or a farm where the kitchen was fully exposed. And guests were like watching these like very beautifully dressed. I think that's important. I think that's important if we're going to talk about, you know, culinary experiences. Then I think like staff also, kind of, if they are going to be part of the experience, I think a cohesive uniform, you know, I love that. I love those like those fashion moments on the wonderful people that, you know, help you with your food on your big day. I think that's very cool. That exposed kitchen moment, guests have insight into what's coming in and out. The presentation of the hors d'oeuvres during the cocktail hour. It is new. This is like, I don't even know how to describe some of the favorite things that I've seen, you know, on sticks, in rocks, in like, I need to just show you a photo of what I'm talking about. It's really just like the presentation is not just like a fancy tray and like a cute little, puff pastry. I think it's all coming back to personalization. Foods that people don't necessarily expect at a wedding, but foods that the couple really love.
Yep.
Maybe it's, you know, cuisine from their first trip that they took as a couple. Maybe it's, you know, bringing back a cocktail. They've been at this place before. The cocktail is no longer in the menu, but they desperately want it again for this. You know, bringing things back because they love them. Recreating. The exposed kitchen, I think, is very fun and a very cool way to get your guests in on the moment but also I think, yeah, cocktail hour hors d'oeuvre presentation. What a way to kind of set the tone, I think, for the food, the culinary experience to come. I think that's like, if you're going to look for one way and probably one of them, maybe the more affordable ways to do this beyond like, I don't know, tableside carvings, like all these things, it's a service. Like that's another cost. But I do think the cocktail hour elevation of the hors d'oeuvres is an actionable and 100%. Slightly more budget friendly. I don't even want to say budget friendly, but more affordable way to, you know, to do this.
Just changing the attire of kind of your service staff will literally elevate the entire like period. And the way that they're presented sometimes does impact the quality and the taste, the way that you taste the food and perceive it. And then just adding an interesting vessel to put, you could put some spring rolls in that thing. And it was, and if you had it in like an upside, like you're saying, an upside down rock or something that's, I don't know, it does it. It sometimes
it does it.
I don't know what it is, but your mind is like, oh, this is nice.
Right. If you could take out the audio, right? And I'm watching somebody experience something at a wedding and they do that, you've won. You know, like you've won. If they do the jaw dropped, like eyes narrowed, what am I looking at? This is incredible. I have never seen this, nor will I ever see it again. Like you've won. And that is, and there is a way to do that in a way that is like not difficult. Like you said, whether that's elevating service staff's attire, choosing an interesting vessel, you know, presenting a very traditional food in a non-traditional way. Cool ways to do this.
Presentation is everything for everything. For like everything. You can wrap a very generic gift. If you elevate that thing with a nice bow, it's instantly from Bergdorf's. So we're going All right.
You said it.
We got to move into some listener emails because we're having the best time talking about everything. I know. But I do want to talk one last thing. Content creation.
It's happening.
We want our pictures now. It's my money. I want it now. It's like rapid. We need it instantly. Talk to me about what you're seeing with content creation slightly, because we do have a content creator coming on to give us the deep. But tell me.
So exciting. Okay. My first takeaway when we're talking about content creation, I am so grateful that this vendor category has emerged, because I do think there is a lot of pressure on photographers to deliver quickly. And ultimately, the photographer that you hire, and you know, this is, I think, maybe this is a hot take. Maybe it's not. I think it's a fair take, actually. The photographer that you hire is designed, and their function and job is to provide you with keepsakes that you will have for your entire life. Good things like keepsakes and heirlooms take time. They take time. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, all right, a sneak peek. All right, I get it. You want it now. But these professionals, these experts are truly masters of their craft. So many of them shoot on film, and they have a personal brand and personal expectations that they want to meet for you. And that's why you hire them. So, I mean, I love that there has been a split in this kind of moment, right? Like you want those photos now, you're going to go to a content creator who is going to be on the ground capturing content for your reels, content for your feed. And I, you know, TikTok, Instagram, all of it. And that kind of either, you know, your photographer can do their job. And I love that. And this is a big category. I mean, I think this is going to explode in 2024 and in 2025. I think it's going to rev up this year and really hit next year. But I cannot be more excited for it, especially like social media and weddings right now. We are in a new era. And I think that contributes to this like idea of everything is bolder. The colors are brighter. The fun is funner. Like it's everything, you know, because we're seeing this, like it's all playing out on social, and it's, you know, content creators are behind a lot of that. So I really respect what they do. And I think they fill a really wonderful gap in the wedding, the post-wedding experience, and also alleviate some pressure from vendors who really probably shouldn't have to shoulder it. So all for it. I'm excited. I can't wait for that episode. I can't wait. I'm going to tune in.
All right.
I'm excited.
Yeah. And if you didn't hear the episode that we did have a photographer on that talks about the meticulousness of editing photos and, like you're saying, shooting film and the long lead time it takes to kind of produce that, go back and take a listen to that as well. You'll get a lot of insight. But
content creation. We're going to talk about that a little later, but I'm very excited about it too. It's going to, going to take a lot of pressure off all of us. So. Rapid fire listener submissions. Okay. Will I regret having a bow hair scarf, a fad, instead of a timeless traditional veil?
Bow hair scarf. Okay, as far as I'm concerned, bows, I know like they're having a moment right now. I was wearing one yesterday in my hair. I mean, they are definitely here and they are trendy, but like bows and weddings forever. Timeless. I don't think you're gonna, I don't think necessarily you'll regret it. And I also don't think you need to necessarily choose to have one or the other.
I was about to say, get both.
Have both, right? Like wear the veil either at your reception or at your ceremony and then switch into the bow during your reception. Or you could, you know, you could save the bow for the after party, or you could do any iteration of that. You want to wear like a cute little short veil with your little mini dress at your after party?
Sure.
I love that for you. I think like this is not, the answer to this is not you have to choose one. I would say get both. I think, you know, if one is more important, put the money there and then save the money on the second accessory. And, you know, it's your wedding. What other time are you going to have the option to wear like 45 hair accessories in your life?
At like 300 different dresses. Wear it all, buy it all.
Four things on my wedding day. I started with a veil and one headband. That was during my ceremony. And then I changed and I had a different headband entirely. And then I changed into a bathing suit and I wore a different veil than my first veil. And then I kept that veil on until 2 a.m. So my response to you is do it all. Maybe extend your options. You will not regret it. You will regret not wearing it. I really deeply believe that.
You will regret not wearing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do it. All for it.
All right. How do I add fun elements to the reception party send-off? Are glow sticks tacky? What if sparklers are not allowed at the venue?
This is very common. Sparklers are oftentimes not allowed at a venue, and I think a lot of couples have to contend with this. Sparklers, I also just kind of want to caveat and say another disclaimer. Sparklers with guests that have been overdoing it a little bit can be a little dangerous. So I kind of love when the sparklers are removed from the equation kind of to begin with. So I think that there are a lot of fun options. I've seen really pretty ribbons being waved. I've seen kind of, I think cold sparks are having a moment right now. I was about to
say cold sparklers are good.
Those are more like controlled by somebody else who are not your guests and are not, you know, tipsy. Right. So that is safer. And I think honestly, that has a bigger visual impact. I'm not sure if cold sparks will be allowed if sparklers aren't, but I mean,
sometimes
I think
sometimes they are because they're not, they're cold. They're not,
right. They're not like an active sparking thing. Flame. So I think that, right. You know, just fire, exposed flame. So I think that's a really good option. What other things have I seen? I mean, I don't think glow sticks are tacky. I think like if you're just fresh off your silent disco and glow sticks, like they make perfect sense within context, I think. I would say glow sticks, cold sparks, do both, have them hold something, wave something, like noise things I think can be fun too. No, I would say just choose something else. I think it's fun to have a moment like that, to have a tunnel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I like the cold sparklers the most just because you're saying it's controlled by someone else.
Yeah.
The concept of getting the everyone in line to create this exit with the sparklers, lighting them, do it. It's like
true.
Woo! Ooh. It's like herding cats, Winner's especially nightmare. Everyone's drunk. And then I have started a fire because of it. So I have PTSD from that anyway. But
cold sparks, they can be wherever they want to be. You can flame just on, walk turn, out.
Cue it.
It's time.
It's time. From a sustainability standpoint, though, I am not crazy about glow sticks just because they do end up piled somewhere where they are still glowing.
And they're single use and they're not good stuff.
Everyone's still on with their lives. So. But choose your adventure here. If you don't, if something is tacky to someone else, doesn't mean it's tacky to you. If you love it, lean into it and do it.
Do it.
Thoughts on memorial tables?
I think they're very common at weddings, and if you know, there's a way. I understand really wanting to do them, and I actually think that they can be done really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Older elder wedding photos. You kind of have those kind of set up to kind of honor the people that can't be with you. I think they're usually placed near the guest book, and I think that's like the right place for them.
Agreed.
I think like you wouldn't, I wouldn't make this like a focal point of your party. I think it kind of should be kind of wrapped into a side table, let people wander around the room, get to know you a little bit better by kind of getting to know your family legacy. But yeah, I mean, I think like absolutely, if it's important to you, you know, you want to honor somebody's memory, then I would say do it. There are also other ways to do that too. You can save a seat for somebody at the ceremony or the reception. You can, you know, you can hang somebody's favorite flowers on a chair mm-hmm. right next to you just to keep that person close. You can wear one of their mementos down the aisle, put a little chain on your bouquet. You know, so if you're kind of on the fence about having a full-blown table, know that there are so many other ways to,
yeah.
you know, take somebody that you love with you on your big day. So lots of ways to do it.
Tons.
Yeah.
Even tons. I like to say get playful with the frames too. Sometimes switch them up so maybe they match in the decor, but we've done it next to the guest book, but the guest book was like an artist book. Like it was from a MoMA. It was beautiful. It was really, really lovely. All right. So we're going to get into emails.
All right, let's go.
Dear Betches Brides, I'm a winter 2024 bride, and I'm hoping you can touch on a topic that's come up a lot while I've been wedding planning. What makes a timeless wedding? I love how you always say that having a wedding already makes it traditional, but I'm really struggling with how to make it timeless. While I want to remain true to my future husband and me, I still want to look back at my photos and not cringe from how dated they look. I feel really guilty thinking this way, so I'm hoping other brides feel the same way too, and that you can help me.
Okay, don't feel guilty. I think this is a thing that a lot of people grapple with when they plan weddings. Like, I want to look back on my wedding and love it in 50 years. That's a lot of pressure, you know? Like, you want to make sure that you're planning something that stands the test of time. I think my biggest tip here is to always ground your decor, your fashion to place. I do not think you can go wrong if you are designing an event, dressing for an event in a way that makes sense within the context of your environment. So, you know, like if you are having a big church wedding, then, you know, maybe you're going to dress for that. Maybe the floral, if you're having a winter wedding, maybe you're going to stick to those traditional colors that you see. You know, the timeless colors that kind of are consistently associated with that season, whether that's, you know, maybe like an evergreen, a little bit of a darker red, you know, not Christmas colors, something white, maybe something blue. I mean, I think color can kind of come into it, but I also think it's important to talk about like timeless is not necessarily like a cut and dry word for absolutely everybody. So at the end of the day, as long as your event is kind of grounded to the place, and grounded to your love story and feels personal to you, I think it will stand the test of time. And how you kind of bring color palette, you know, and texture and fashion into that, I think will impact the overall flavor. But I think those core things tying it to place will help with that progression. Looking back on it 50 years, I think you're going to feel good about it.
And also, like when you think of a timeless wedding, even though it looks great, it's still not probably something that you would execute in the time that you're looking at it. So it's like timeless is kind of like, it just doesn't look terrible. It's still, you're like, I don't know if I would wear that now, but it looks good on her. And then I think to ensure that your wedding, you still resonate with your wedding potentially in 50 years, I would say make sure that the decisions you're making are feelings focused. So that way, when you look back at the imagery, the feeling comes back. And I like that to me will, again, like ground it in a feeling, ground it in a gut decision and saying, this is the dress. This is the hair piece. These are the flowers because I feel it. So every time you see them, you're literally transported right back to that moment. I think that's what makes a timeless wedding because it takes you back to that time that you couldn't get back again. Do we want to go in a game now?
We're doing a game.
It's a game. I'm sorry.
Cue the game. I'm excited. We love a game.
I love a game.
Gotta do a game.
I want to play a game of down the aisle or out the door. This week, my producer has sourced some past wedding trends, and we are going to decide if we are bringing them down the aisle with us into 2024 or kicking them out the door. Okay. All right. Concerts during the reception.
Oh. Are we really doing this? I guess. Concerts, I mean, like a celebrity guest?
Yeah, like Nelly or
Flo Rida, Engage Summits, we see
you. I want to know who's doing that. I want to, like, that's, I guess. People are doing it?
So more affluent weddings are having actual, like Justin, I got an email from a vendor saying we can get you Justin Timberlake for a wedding. And I was like, I just want Justin Timberlake. I don't need him to come to a wedding. He can just come to my house. But
right. Okay. So that, okay. Here's how I'm looking at this as someone who maybe doesn't see this all the time. Down the aisle, because I would 100% go to a wedding in which Nelly, like Justin Timberlake was going to be there. The answer is yes, I will see you there. I am, of course, coming to the ceremony, but we all know what I'm excited for. So down the aisle, in my opinion.
Down the aisle. I 100% yes. agree. Receiving lines.
They're different now. They're just not. I would say, okay, here's how I'm answering this. What is it? It's not down the aisle. What's the other one? Out the door. Okay. Out the door for traditional receiving lines, but down the aisle with taking intentional time and traveling with your spouse and going table to table during the reception and building in time and speaking with your wedding planner about making that a priority. Because you want to be able to like make eye contact with everybody that you love. So I would say out the door with the traditional standing in a line and everybody filing in, because I don't know if that's really the best guest experience, waiting on a line. We don't love that. But the ethos of it, I love. Mm-hmm. So I would say yes and no.
I agree.
Do it in some way.
I agree with, like, I haven't figured out a cool way to make this work.
Right.
Logistically. So I'm like, until I do, I'm gonna have to swing it out the door.
Right.
But I I agree with you.
Fully. Yeah.
Flower crowns.
Down the aisle for flower people. Yes.
And, yes. Yeah.
That's cute.
That's cute.
That's my answer.
Okay. Period.
Yeah.
Done.
Period.
Not wearing certain colors, red, black, etc., as a wedding guest.
Oh, you're going to hit me with the etiquette question.
Oh.
Out the door for red. I think unless it is part of like a very specific color palette, I think like a very, very, very bold, bright red. I think most etiquette experts would tell you that that's probably not great to do. Just you're not going to feel right doing that. So I would say out the door with red, down the aisle with black. Oh man, you can never go wrong with, I mean, a black dress is always appropriate. So 100% Agreed. Down the aisle with that, but also just being kind of mindful of colors that might be flashy or, you know, take some attention away and being mindful. And if you're ever on the fence, if something is inappropriate, then I would just not wear it.
My mom says, if you have to ask, the answer is no.
That's right. Totally.
So if you're a wedding guest thinking about it explicitly, maybe ask the person, but you probably already know the answer. Handing out party favors.
Party favors. Like,
do people still do that?
Right. I'm like, I'm just going to say, I don't know. And therefore out the door, because I don't think people are handing things out anymore, just because I just don't think it's happening.
Sustainability, guys. Unless you're giving
one-time
a fabulous
use.
Like welcome bag on the front end, there's no need to favorize your gift. You just paid probably $100 plus per plate, and you gave them an open bar and probably a whole concert with Justin Timberlake. They don't need a candle or bubbles.
They don't.
Or actually, we did do favors of custom sweatpants before, and I like that. But anywho, all right. So that's it for this week's episode of Betches Brides. Sarah, darling, where can people find you, or where should people follow?
Oh, yes. Well, first things first, definitely you can always find incredible content on all things wedding at brides.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at brides. Made it nice and easy for you.
You love us.
And then if you are looking for me, I am also on Instagram, and that's a little bit more involved. It is at Sar, just Sar, _ and then my last name, Shriver.
Love. All right, Ms. Shriver, thank you so much. You guys can follow the show at Betches Brides on Instagram, and you can follow me at I Am Fallon Carter. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show. I said follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now. We'll have new episodes every single Monday, so be sure to subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. Thank you so much for listening. Until death do us part. The Betches Brides podcast is produced by Rebecca Salzmacat, Lauren Salome, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Rebecca Salzmacat. Social media by Lauren Salome. Be sure to follow us at Betches Brides and send us your emails to brides@betches.com.
Betches.